just between us.
Hey!
Just between us.
Hey!
Hello! I'm Allison Raskin. I'm a writer, director, and Gemini, but almost a Cancer.
Woo! It's Gemini season, baby! Gear up! It's a fucking chaotic season. I'm Gabby Dunn. I'm a writer, bicon, bisexual icon, wink, and newly minted redhead. Hello, everyone.
Wow, I do enjoy your red hair. I didn't get to say anything, but it looks nice.
Thank you. It's Haley Williams from Paramore. It's her company, and that bitch knows red hair.
Yeah, do they only sell red hair?
They don't. They sell a lot of different colors. I got pink, too, but I like being a redhead. I feel that that is the true me.
Because your mom's a redhead.
Yeah, I just feel like it matches me. I don't know. Plus, I was overdue for a crazy color.
Do you have to bleach it ahead of time or no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I bleached it with their lightener and then also bleached from a drugstore.
So you bleached your whole head by yourself?
Oh, no. Cheyenne helped me, my sister. Okay. So, I can't do shit. Cheyenne should go to beauty school. She's really good at this stuff.
She should. Oh, my God. She should. Have you told her that?
Yes. And me and my family used to try to push her to go to beauty school when she was in high school because we were like, this bitch is not going to college. But so she did this. She did a great job. But I got pink, so maybe it'll be pink later in the summer. But I hadn't had a crazy color in a while, and it's quarantine, so you gotta.
Are you afraid when you bleach your head that you're going to bleach your whole body by accident and then die?
Yeah.
This is Just Between Us, a variety show filled with heartfelt advice,
ridiculous games,
and brutal honesty.
So how do you feel that it's Gemini season? We are both Geminis, by the way. Please don't turn off this podcast just because we're both Geminis. I understand that that is a lot. So your birthday, I mean, it might be close to your birthday. Your birthday might have passed or something, but your birthday's June 20th. My mm-hmm. birthday's June 1st.
Right.
So Gemini season is actually like the season of chaos, making crazy decisions, being impulsive.
All inside your own home.
I know. How are we going to do it? How will you achieve it?
I guess you start an OnlyFans account.
Honestly, you know what I hate? Can I do a rant for a second?
Sure.
Okay. I hate that OnlyFans is like mainstream now or becoming like this thing that like celebrities are talking about when they've never had to do sex work or like want it. Like people who have never done sex work should not be putting OnlyFans in their songs. And that's a read on Beyonce. Yes, I'm a Gemini. Guess what? It's chaos. Time to criticize Beyonce.
But like, yeah, but you can't do that. They're going to cancel our podcast.
I love her, but I'm just saying that I find it annoying that OnlyFans was so stigmatized and then all of a sudden celebrities talk about it and now it's like a mainstream thing. And I just think we can't be saying it as a punchline unless we destigmatize sex work. Thank you. That's Gemini season. You read Beyonce.
You what, Beyonce?
Read her. Like, criticize her.
Oh. So is OnlyFans, is that what it is exclusively or is it just paid content?
I'm so glad you asked. Okay. So OnlyFans is for sex workers. And it started as such. But now that they're getting more popular, they've started doing these things, this outreach where they're like, OnlyFans is like Patreon. It's for everybody. It's not just sex work. And like, it's this like clearly pushing off the people who created the platform, not being grateful to the people that like basically gave the platform its name and started it and just trying to distance themselves from sex work, even though that's clearly what they were initially for. And like, that sucks. Yeah. And I feel like it's going to push, they're going to start restricting like content. I feel like the way Snapchat did or does. And like, it's just shitty because something is used by sex workers. And then as soon as people find out about it, the platform itself is like, no, 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 no. And like it just causes like more problems of like where are they going to go to be able to do their stuff? And if OnlyFans starts being like reaching out, I don't know, it just seems ungrateful to their initial subscriber base. Like it seems like, no, 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 that's not what we're for. Oh, you found out about us? Just kidding, just kidding. And like, I hate it.
So they're now trying to change what they're about?
Yeah, they're sort of trying to be like, oh, anyone can join an OnlyFans. And like,
but that's not saying that you can't continue to use it for sex work. I'm hoping that that will be the case.
Yeah. It's just worrisome because I've seen some people be like, oh, no, they've started the little backtracking press. You know what I mean? And that's always kind of worrying.
I find all press to be worrying. We've got a great episode for you guys this week.
I'm so glad I was allowed to rant about that. Okay, so this week we're talking to Rasha Pecoraro, co-host of the podcast Root of Evil. And if you haven't heard Root of Evil, pause, go listen to it, and then come back.
Yeah, we'll see you in 7 hours.
Exactly. And later we're going to be discussing the anti-diet movement, a new way of thinking about our bodies and dieting.
Ooh. I picked that one because I saw it on Jezebel.
Okay.
But first, hit it! International question! International question! International question! Trista Washington.
I kind of love the name Trista.
It's fun. Do you think that's her full name? Is it like Christina? I don't know. Is it like a nickname? Could it be short for something? Katatrinas? Okay, anyway. Trista, full name, says, what do you think of societal expectations of romantic timelines? Wow. I feel like there's always commentary on people's relationships and how quickly they reach certain milestones, like moving in together or getting engaged/married. And often it's a negative judgment if couples move too fast, whatever that means. So I'm just wondering what you think about this. Was this something you've ever worried about? And how do you think people can overcome this concern and just do whatever the hell makes them happy?
Okay. So I know you have a lot of thoughts about this.
I do.
I'm judgmental.
Wow. Okay. So share more.
And a hypocrite. That's it. End of show. I have a friend who just got divorced. Like just. I actually have two friends that just got divorced and are engaged.
What are their full names?
They know who they are. And they just got engaged again. And my first, one of them, when I saw it, I was like, oh, good. And I was happy for her. And one of them, I saw it and went, this is a disaster.
Really? And what was the difference?
One of them, I feel, was the victim in their divorce, like was like the person who got fucked over. So I was happy for her to have found love again. And she's a little bit older. So I was like, okay, great. Like they found each other. Good for them. And then the other one was the quote unquote bad person in their divorce.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. And then like is like engaged to this new person. And I was like, part of me was like, oh, ma'am, this is what I said to my partner because I'm a judgy bitch. I was like, getting engaged is not going to fix what's wrong with you. Like, you have not done any reflection on why you've gone through this first breakup and of a marriage, and now you're engaged again. And I was like, oh, babe, I have bad news. Like, this is going to catch up with you. But it was too fast. Now, here's why I'm a hypocrite. Because I was with my last girlfriend for 3 months and we had multiple matching tattoos. And also, I had another girl.
Within 3 months, you had multiple tattoos.
Yes.
You were with her for longer than that.
For a year and a half, yeah. And then also, I dated a girl and 3 months in, I bought her two cats. Not bought, I adopted her two cats.
Yeah, but those were her cats. They weren't your cats.
Yeah, but I got them for her.
Yeah, but like your friend could get you cats.
I don't think you should get anyone a pet as a gift, even though Beans was a gift from an ex-girlfriend. I just think there's certain things where I'm like, yikes. But then like it's hard when you're in it to also be like, yikes to yourself.
I used to be very strict about these rules and thought about it all the time and was like very worried about it. And then Jake and I moved in together after only 6 months, which was hilarious because he clearly cared a lot about it too and was like, we're not moving in together until 8 months. And I was like, okay. And so he told his roommates that it was going to be like at the end of September or something. But then like we came back from a vacation and he like never left my apartment. So we technically moved in together after 6 months, but he was like so worried about the appearance of that like he needed in his head to think it was officially at 8 months.
That's why it's so individual. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm sure, and like, I don't mean to whatever, but I'm sure people looked at you guys and are like, oh my God, that was so fast. You know?
You know what's really weird is that we have not, I mean, maybe people are lying to our faces, but nobody, even including my parents, has ever acted like we were moving too fast. And I think it was because of like the life stage that we're in. Mm-hmm. And this is what I've really grown to realize is that it is, like you said, it's so personal in terms of like where you are in your journey with yourself. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a place where you are like settled and you know what you want and you're stable and you've experienced enough relationships to know what a good relationship is and what it is you're looking for long term, then I think like power to you, you know, like get married after a month. I don't give a fuck. Like I think.
And there's people that like, okay, when our grandparents are like, I met your grandfather one time and I knew he was my future husband and we were engaged after 3 days. And everyone's like, oh, we love it because it's been like 45 years. But then like I think back to that time and like that's kind of what you had to do. Like you weren't going to like now as we're older, people like wait longer and longer to get married. But in the 50s, it would be like, what? You've been together a year and you're not married?
I think that the issue now is that this idea of like one foot in, one foot out, where it's mm-hmm. like, I don't know if this is the right thing. Like, I'm not sure. There might be something better out there. There's always this search for something better out there.
Yeah.
Whereas I think a healthy relationship is a lot of just like, who knows what is out there? But I am choosing to pick you. I am choosing to commit to you.
Yes.
And then let's make this life work.
So here's the thing. And maybe this is bad and impulsive and like not the way to live life. But for me, and I've been talking to my partner a lot about this, you can't ever know what the right choice is. You really mm-hmm. can't. You have to, that's what life is. You have to just keep making decisions. And not making a decision is making a decision. So you can't know if marrying someone or if moving in with someone is the right decision. Ultimately, in the long, like you could be like, yes, it's the right decision for me now. And then in 5 years, who fucking knows? But like, you have to keep making choices because that's how life works. Like you have to just keep deciding. Did I know moving to LA was going to be the right thing? No, but you got to just keep making choices.
But I also think that there's different levels of self-awareness. And the more mm-hmm. self-aware you are, the better you are informed to make a choice. So yes. That's why I think it's really important to like do the work of figuring out what you want your life to look like, what your partner wants their life to look like, what your yeah. values are. And then that's a much more informed choice, even though still you can't predict the future. There's like more, you know, information there.
I think you have to be on the same page because you can't pressure someone into going too fast. And also I worry because, I mean, how well do you really know? How well do you really know the person? Like, yeah. It gets to, like, you know, people who, I mean, my ex-girlfriend and I, we were, like, you know, so obsessed with each other. And then, like, stuff went down that I didn't, like, it was, she was changing as a person. And, like, I didn't really know, like, I was down for the ride, but she was not interested in having me down for the ride. And, like, I think like we maybe moved really quickly and I don't know because it's hard because it feels good at the time to like be mm-hmm. moving like that. And then, you know, in hindsight, you're like, uh-oh.
Well, one of like the biggest like lessons in like cognitive behavioral therapy is getting rid of shoulds and musts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like these arbitrary rules. So like mm-hmm. this idea of like at 1.5 years is when you get engaged and at two right. years is when you get married. Like all of that, like thinking that way just like really debilitates our happiness.
Yeah.
And makes us super judgmental. And so in terms of like, how do you not care if other people are judging you? You sort of just have to assume other people are judging you and like, who cares?
Oh my God. And I found out much later that people were like, oh my God, they're going to get married and it's going to be a disaster. And I was like, because I asked my current partner, because we've known each other for years and like we're friends. And I was like, did you think like, oh my God, this is going to implode? And they were like, no, I thought you guys were going to be together forever and it was going to suck.
How was it going to suck?
They felt that I was cleaning up her messes a lot and like walking behind her, sort of like cleaning up her, like she would just like knock down buildings and I'd be behind her like building back the buildings or whatever, which is sort of true. But I was like so in it. Like she talked about like proposing to me. Like we went to look at rings at like 4 months. Like it was like, and
you never told me that.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. We went to a jewelry store to look at rings. And so I do appreciate caution. I do appreciate like going slow and because like you don't know. I feel like I rush into stuff. And then like a year and a half in, I'm like, oh no.
Like yeah, but like so that's something that you can know about yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So that's your self-awareness so that when you're in a relationship, you can say, I tend to move too fast. Therefore, I'm not going to do that this time. Versus if that's not a history that you have and then you meet somebody and you're both 35 and you both want to start a family mm-hmm. and you feel connected, you have had the deep discussions, you know what your future wants to be mm-hmm. and they align, then, mm-hmm. you know, 6 months might be a long enough time before you get engaged. There's a lot of factors at work, you know, like fertility is often an issue, mm-hmm. maybe potentially health insurance, things like, okay, you're going to move for a job, but I don't feel comfortable moving with you unless we're engaged. There's so many different factors that mm-hmm. to judge another couple, it's just our pettiness. It's just like mm-hmm. sometimes it's true concern and that's valid. But for the most part, it's just like watching reality TV in real life and mm-hmm. just like judging people's choices for no reason.
And oftentimes I'm like, oh, my God, these people are so young, but I'm holding them to my own standard. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, my God, you're getting married in your mid-20s. Holy shit. But, like, I couldn't do that. But that doesn't mean that other people can't.
I just think the biggest takeaway is that you have to do what's right for you. And then you have to just let go of caring about other people's judgment because you can't control that. And there's tons of people that followed all the right rules and mm-hmm. dated for 5 years and mm-hmm. then get divorced after 1 year. And there's people who meet, get married almost immediately and are together forever.
And every choice is a choice, and even not choosing is a choice. Like, you can't ever know. So you just got to go on what you know that day.
I'd argue, again, let's look for some self-awareness. Let's do some true evaluation. Let's have open and honest conversations with our partner. Mm-hmm. And then make your choice.
Yeah. Every choice is a choice, and no choice is a choice. Put that on a shirt.
Did you like discover this saying yesterday? You said it like 5 times today. Are you working for a campaign where that's their slogan?
I'm trying to get it into the zeitgeist so they hear it somewhere else and go, Gabby's right.
If you want to submit your international question, send it to justbetweenuspod@gmail.com. That's justbetweenuspod@gmail.com.
Up next, we've got a juicy interview with our highly esteemed guest, Rasha Pecoraro. So stay tuned.
And remember, no choice is also a choice.
That's good. Just between us.
Hey. Hi, everyone. Allison here. Anyone who knows me well knows that I love to read. I am always looking for new books, and that is why I'm so excited that this episode is sponsored by Book of the Month. Book of the Month's mission is to help readers discover new books they love and to promote the work of emerging authors. It was so fun for me to get to pick which book I wanted to read this month and have it shipped right to my door. Book of the Month makes it easy to decide which book to read next. Each month, the editorial team reads through hundreds of new titles. They pick some of the best new books for you to choose from. All the books are good, so you can't go wrong. Every aspect of the Book of the Month experience is designed to be fun and special for readers. They have a highly anticipated release at the beginning of each month. Books are delivered in this really adorable bright blue box, and there's a fun app to help you pick your book and track your reading process. They also offer great values on new release hardcover fiction. It's much cheaper than other options. Shipping is always free, and with a loyalty program, you get rewards and even lower prices the longer you stay as a member. My first book from Book of the Month was The Husbands by Holly Gramazio. I am tearing through this book. It is so fun. It's basically about this woman who one day comes home and there's a husband in her apartment, and she's like, "Where did you come from?" And then she figures out that every time her new husband goes into the attic, a new husband comes out, and she's like shuffling through all these different husbands from the attic trying to figure out which one is the best. It is right up my alley, and I love it so much. So if you want to take part in Book of the Month and have a brand new book shipped right to your door every single month, go to bookofthemonth.com and get your first book for $5 with code PETALS. That's $5 off with code PETALS. I cannot recommend this enough.
Has dealing with stress and trying to get more focused a New Year's resolution you haven't cracked yet or don't really know how to fix? I have a lot of trouble staying focused, and I also get super stressed out, and I think that not being able to stay focused really dovetails with that. So if there was a way for me to keep my focus that didn't also cause my brain to get so scattered with stress, I would love to be able to fix it. I sometimes can't focus on the task at hand because I'm so busy realizing that there are things I need to do on the Just Between Us Instagram account. So I'll be like fully writing something and all of a sudden my brain will go, JBU Instagram, have to post on social media. Truvaga is a handheld product that stimulates the vagus nerve to improve overall health and wellness. Stimulating the vagus nerve with Truvaga helps to balance and strengthen the nervous system, which reduces stress, increases focus, improves mood, and improves sleep. Truvaga is owned by ElectroCore and uses its patented technology for overall health and wellness benefits. Its utilized technology is the most clinically studied and tested vagus nerve therapy available. Customizable sessions are only 2 minutes long. Recommended usage is one session in the morning and one at night. Truvaga comes programmed with 350 sessions, which, if used twice a day, will last approximately 6 months. It's drug-free and easy-to-use therapy to help improve your health. No app or phone is required. We offer free standard shipping, payment plan options, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. It's only available in the U.S. at this time. Visit Truvaga.com, Truvaga.com, and enter promo code JUSTBETWEENUS to enhance your wellness journey, support this podcast, and receive $15 off. That's Truvaga.com. Check out promo code JUSTBETWEENUS.
With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you all about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. And then she can either type her response or use their voice-to-text feature. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. Right before I found out about this project, my mom made an offhand comment about wanting to write a memoir because she had such a wild childhood and there are all these things she's never really talked to us about. But asking someone to sit down and write a memoir is kind of daunting. So then I got her MyLifeInABook.com, and now she's getting prompts to answer on a weekly basis, and it's a lot easier than just undertaking an entire memoir. I'm so excited to see what my mom does with MyLifeInABook.com because she's someone who doesn't always feel comfortable just sharing about herself, but having these prompts and knowing that I really want to hear her answers is going to inspire her to probably share more with me about her life and her upbringing than I've ever been shared with before. So I'm so excited for that. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code JUSTBETWEENUS at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. Use code JUSTBETWEENUS for 10% off today.
Welcome back to Just Between Us. It's time for the juiciest, most scandalous, controversial segment known to all of podcasting, Tough Questions.
This week, we've got Rasha Pecoraro, who is one of the creators of the Root of Evil podcast. And if you haven't listened to it, like I said earlier, just pause this podcast, come back in 7 hours when you've finished Root of Evil. Hello, Rasha.
Mahalo. Thank you so much. I'm honored. You two are phenomenal humans, and I'm excited to be here.
Oh, thank you. I'm blushing, but you can't see.
I can't see.
Could you give a little background of what this podcast is and who you are and what part of a what family you're part of?
Sure, no problem. So, as you said, my name is Rasha Pecoraro. I am the youngest daughter of Fauna Hodel. And my older sister, my only sister, Yvette Gentile, and I are co-hosts of Root of Evil, the true story of the Hodel family and the Black Dahlia. So I was actually born Rasha Hodel since my parents weren't married. And this podcast is about my mom and her incredible life story and how it intersects with the most infamous unsolved murder in American history, the murder of Elizabeth Short, aka the Black Dahlia. And Unfortunately, my mom passed away from breast cancer in September 2017, but it was almost like she knew that she was not going to be here. And she literally recorded everything. So we had all this amazing, you know, archival audio that she left us. And, you know, she realized her dream 11 days before she died from breast cancer. She signed the final deal with TNT and Patty Jenkins and made the TV show I Am the Night, which is a limited TV series that aired on TNT. And so my sister and I, like, we lost mom September 2017. Literally 6 weeks later, we were on the set of I Am the Night on Warner Brothers Studio Lot with Chris Pine and India Isley. And then we were approached by TNT and Cadence 13 to make a companion podcast to I Am the Night. Thus, Root of Evil was born. And that's the short story.
Yeah. So you weren't even looking to share the story more. They came to you?
They did. They came to us. And absolutely, we were always looking to share the story more. Patty Jenkins was, and still is, she was an amazing friend of our mom's for over a decade. So we knew that the TV show was always going to happen. Mm. But we know, like, I Am the Night is just loosely based on our mom's novel, One Day She'll Darken, which is, it just covers the first, you know, 28 years of our mom's life. But I Am the Night literally just watches her when she's a teenager. Like, so much more has happened. And because our mom left us, like, these gems of these audio tapes, we're like, oh my, we knew we were going to do something, but we weren't in that mindset because we were literally on the set, you know, for most of 2017 and 2018. So we were just in TV show mode. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then when they approached us, Zach Levitt, who runs C13 Originals with Cadence 13, he's like a godsend. Like we think he's like our brother that like mom gave birth to, but just didn't know it. he's so amazing. And he held our hands through the entire process because it was some deep and dark and dirty stuff, you know, like you listen to it. It was a lot.
Can you explain to our listeners your family's connection with George Hodel and George Hodel's connection to the Black Dahlia?
Absolutely. So again, long story short, my mom, Fauna Hodel, was given up for adoption in 1951. And her birth certificate said she was half African-American. And that she was mixed. So she was given up to an African-American family, raised in Reno, Nevada, or Sparks, the small town out of Reno. And she ended up finding her birth mom, Tamar Hodel, in Honolulu, Hawaii. She actually found her in the 70s, and I'm the Night, the time frame is a little bit skewed. But when she found her birth mother and flew there and met her, Tamar told my mom, not only was she not half Black, but she might possibly be the product of incest because Tamar was, you know, she was intimate with her own father, George Hodel, who was an infamous doctor in Hollywood and in all throughout Los Angeles. And she told my mom that day when she met her, you know, all this stuff like, oh my God, you know, you might be the product of incest. Plus, you know, he was accused of killing Elizabeth Short, the Black Dahlia, which was this gruesome, horrible, disgusting murder that if any of your listeners Google it and go down that rabbit hole, you can never unsee those photos. It was really grotesque. I mean, of course, it was grotesque that Tamar was so open about saying she had, you know, a sexual relationship with her own father. But my mom that day was just like, I'm sorry, what? Like, you know, like her whole identity and her life was shattered in an instant because now, you know, she was never Black enough. She was never white enough. And now she's told she's not Black at all, which totally ripped her identity from her. And then she finds out she might be the product of incest. But we didn't know for sure, you know, about if George was my mom's father or not. We did do some DNA before my mom passed. And we got some evidence back, forensic evidence that 23andMe did, and 98% he's not my mother's father. However, it's not something that could hold up in court. So we're still like on the journey to figure out who the hell our mom's actual biological father was. And my sister and I, because George, you know, his best friends were Man Ray, the famous surrealist artist, and Henry Miller, the poet, and John Huston, the director. And it's like everything was so convoluted. And George had these crazy wild parties in his home, which is called the Sowden House, which we refer to as the Franklin House, but it's this infamous, like crazy Lloyd Wright home on Franklin Avenue in Hollywood.
I've been there. I went to it.
Oh my God. Have you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I went. It's you can pass it on Franklin Avenue and you know immediately. It's so distinct looking.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like a volcano. And we actually, we filmed there for I Am the Night. Like I've been there several times. We recorded an episode of Rooted Evil there that just, we had so much stuff. Cause as you said, like you press pause, go listen to Root of Evil, you're gone for 7 hours. Mm-hmm. But we even recorded an episode there that ended up on the cutting room floor because there was just so much stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's freaky.
I just find what's so interesting about this story is like the nature versus nurture of everything and what it was like for your mom to find out that her grandfather and potentially her father, who at the time would maybe have been the same person, was a serial killer, because there's proof that he's killed other people too, right?
Right.
So it's not like, oh, maybe he just killed the Black Dahlia. Like, he's definitely a killer.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. My great uncle Steve Hodell wrote several books and he's detailed many killings. And in my humble opinion, I believe George killed multiple people.
I do too. But also that part of it is so fascinating, that his own son did an investigation into his dad trying to prove that he wasn't the killer, only to uncover that he was and then go public with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's not totally messed up, but yeah, totally. I mean, you know, and Yvette and I, my sister, like we grew up always knowing, you know, about it. And I questioned Tamar my entire life because I was actually born and raised in Honolulu, because they ended up moving there when my mom got pregnant, because my sister is gorgeous. She's, you know, she is biracial and, you know, straight and beautiful, married to an amazing man. And then I'm this blonde hair, blue eyed, you know, I never consider myself white, but I think the public would consider me that. And my mom wanted to raise us both in the most beautiful place on the planet. And, you know, I ended up coming out, you know, 11 years ago, and she like loved us unconditionally. Like, talk about nature versus nurture. Our mom was one of the most phenomenal, beautiful, kind human beings you would ever meet. Like, she loved both my sister and I unconditionally. And honestly, she loved everyone she met. She was just the best of the best of the best.
So can you talk about the nature versus nurture of it all? Like, what did you discover about that through doing the show?
You know, we always knew through, you know, prior to doing Root of Evil, my sister and I had always heard, you know, the stories, and our mom didn't have a filter, but at the same time, she kept us very protected. And, you know, other members of the Hodell family participated, you know, in Root of Evil and shared their own stories, which, you know, I wouldn't want to repeat here because it's their story to tell, but you can absolutely hear everything that happened to them on Root of Evil. But essentially, Tamar, who was abused by George, ended up repeating all of that abuse and then some. And I didn't know to what extent until I listened to, you know, the stories that were told on the show. And I'm like, I could barely breathe when I heard everything. And talk about nature versus nurture. Like, Tamar always, in my opinion, always lived her life as a victim. And I think in her mind, she was like, you know, she repeated things because it was done to her, and she never took any responsibility for it. And like my mom, you know, she was abused as well, you know, from her adoptive mother, even though she loved her more than anything. But our mom never even raised her voice at us. You know, like she almost kind of walked around kind of fairy-like, and she didn't even seem real. Like, she was the type of woman that if I didn't feel well and I'd say, Mom, you know, I really don't feel good. I have a, you know, the flu or I'm sick. She'd be like, don't put that on into the universe, Rasha. Like, you're going to manifest being sick. I'm like, Mom, I'm sick. I'm throwing up. I don't feel well. And she'd be like, no. Like, she went the polar opposite way. And she she really stood up to Tamar a lot too, because, you know, she wanted to get to know her. And so, you know, she raised Yvette and I in Hawaii, and, you know, we were a part of that family, and that family dynamic was so messed up, but mom just sheltered us and loved us. And she gave us the gift of her love, whereas Tamar didn't give that to anyone else that, you know, that I know of, you know. Mm-hmm. And our mom chose the light, and I believe Tamar chose the dark, and George, of course, chose the dark. And I don't know a whole lot about his upbringing other than, you know, what's been written in Steve's books, but I just believe that you have the choice. You, any person, has a choice to choose the light instead of the dark, or choose good versus evil. I truly believe that.
Have you ever worried that you have like a serial killer's genes inside of you?
Oh my God, that's the funniest question ever, because I, like my whole life, especially like, you know, I'm 41. So like when, you know, the internet kind of, you know, started, and like you could do like a Yahoo like search, like one of the first things I looked up was, you know, the Black Dahlia murder images. And mm-hmm. I was like, from that moment, I was like, oh my God. And I'm a Disney Harry Potter girl, you know, like I am not someone who's normally obsessed with true crime in any shape or form. But of course that runs through your veins, you know. And when I looked at those photos, like the first immediate thing I felt was absolute disgust. And I just felt, and I think the same thing that my mom felt. My mom, you know, always felt that she wanted to, you know, honor the victims and honor George's victims and Elizabeth mm-hmm. Short. And so like for me, I think I've gone the polar opposite way, you know, because I'd never want to think, oh my God, I have this serial killer's blood running through my veins. Because I've definitely thought that, like, oh my God, you know, I am a descendant of George Hodel. And, you know, my whole life up until, you know, when we did that DNA, I thought, like, I had even extra DNA from him because he might right. also be my grandfather and great grandfather. But, you know, I'm absolutely worried about that. But it's almost like our mom, you know, she just gave us so much love and light that it just overpowers all the rest of that BS.
Can you, speaking of the victims, can you tell our listeners a little bit about Elizabeth Short and like what the situation was, because they might not know the Black Dahlia story?
Yeah. And I, you know, and it's kind of funny because like I try not to focus on, you know, like it's hard not to get caught up in the sensationalism
right.
of Elizabeth Short. But like she was a beautiful young girl. Like I don't even consider her like a woman. Like she was a young girl. Like she was in her early 20s. She was an aspiring actress, you know. And, you know, I don't know if she was a sex worker at the time or not, but that does not mean she deserved to be murdered.
Right.
But what I believe is that George had many girlfriends. And I mean, you know, he ended up having, you know, 12 children from 5 different women, but he was always in polyamorous relationships that I know of. And if anybody turned him down, that's when his wrath would come. And I think my little, you know, scenario is that I think, because there is different, you know, proofs and tidbits of proof that they knew each other. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is circumstantial, but I think that she probably just brushed off his advances and he just went ballistic. And I don't think that was his, you know, first murder, of course, because mm-hmm. I think by that time he had already been accused of killing his secretary.
Right.
And I just think that her life was cut short and she was murdered in the most gruesome way possible. And I don't think it was personal. I think it was George trying to prove something to Man Ray and kind of one up his surrealist, you know, friends that they would do like crazy snuff films and, you know, just do all these crazy things at that home. And her life was taken way too soon. And, you know, her body was left on, you know, the side of the road and posed like a famous Man Ray photograph. Like it was horrific. And I honestly, I didn't know that the details of what was done to her until I listened to Root of Evil and I heard everything from her report of when she died.
Yeah.
And I like literally that I like wanted to throw up. Like, and I was supposed to read those lines and I literally told Zach, I'm like, Zach, I don't think I'm like, nope, I can't even.
Yeah.
And it makes. So they hired someone to do it for us.
Yeah. And she got, I mean, it's like, also a thing with like media sensationalism where she got dubbed the Black Dahlia because it was like some newspaper mm-hmm. was like, you know, oh my God, it'll like be more sensational if we call it like the Black Dahlia case. And then that's kind of taken off. But like it became like a sensation in LA, like this big crime story in Los Angeles that like really got spun into this huge thing. And it's known as, even though we're talking about George Hodel, it's known as like a very famous unsolved crime, although it's unsolved because they weren't really able to get enough evidence on this one person that everyone kind of agrees was the killer.
He was always the number one suspect. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, the top venereal disease doctor in LA, and he had dirt on everybody. So he was untouchable.
Mm,
and
right.
We, you know, and my sister and I and my great uncle Steve, we did the Today Show last year. And I think the last thing, I think the LAPD were contacted by the Today Show. And they said, you know, it's still an open investigation, but they wouldn't comment on, you know, any of the findings that Steve has found. But I, from my understanding, I believe Steve even has DNA. I mean, like, it could be a solved case. It's sad. And like what you were saying earlier, like about how Elizabeth Short was dubbed the Black Dahlia because, you know, of her hair and this, you know, big Dahlia that she would wear. People forget what her name was.
Yes.
You know, like they're like, oh, Black Dahlia. And like, I have been in so many interviews and they're like, oh, Elizabeth Smart. I'm like, no. like her name.
Oh,
I'm like, that
God.
Was a different crime. And she's alive.
Oh my God.
I'm like, but Elizabeth Short, you know, may she rest in peace.
Right.
Like even like before my mom, you know, died and before she got to deal with Patty, you know, she was on, you know, Ghost Adventures and she was always like just on this path. Like she just wanted to shed light and give, you know, Elizabeth peace. And, you know, and even Tamar, to give Tamar peace, because Tamar was, you know, she actually went on trial and accused George of, you know, raping her and he was acquitted. Like, and there were adult witnesses. Like, it's just, it boggles my mind the things that he was able to get away with. But I do think that karma is taking care of it. Like, even though we say, yes, it's the most infamous unsolved murder in American history, you know, I believe it's solved.
That was the other part of the podcast that was so shocking, was that trial. And I wonder if her not being believed, despite having multiple people saying I was in the room and I saw him do it, if that pushed her to forget about the light and embrace the dark because her attempt at the truth was not listened to or was ignored.
I think you absolutely hit the nail on the head. That's what my sister very much, you know, she always saw Tamar in that light. Like, you know, she had no chance basically.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like, I just, no matter what's been done to you, like, I believe that you can make a better choice. I mean, like, I even realized, like, recording Root of Evil, like, I'm a super open book and like almost too much and to a fault. And for me, I realized, especially, you know, hearing about all the sexual abuse and incest that went on in our family and in our history, like, my dad beat the shit out of me until I was 21.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't vocally, thank God my dad and my mom weren't together they were only together a few years. He's been with my stepmom ever since I was like 5 years old, but I didn't tell anyone until I was 21 years old. And I think it's because, and I realized it recording Root of Evil with my family members, that in my head, like, I rationalized it. I was like, well, it's not sexual abuse. It's not incest. So, you know, my father was just an asshole and, you know, it was emotional, physical, and verbal. And I just didn't have a voice because I was like, oh, well, it's not that bad, but any type of abuse is bad. And like, I haven't repeated that. Like, my wife and I have a daughter together. Like, I feel bad raising my voice to her.
Yeah.
You know, I always try to choose, the light. And I know it's not, you know, thank God my father, you know, didn't have sex with me, but I mean, I definitely, like many, many years of therapy I've had to work through to realize it's not my fault, and any victim, it's not their fault.
What made you finally tell someone at 21?
Because I almost died. So I was visiting home. My dad was really, really drunk. And you know, he was a, you know, I think now he just does pot. I don't know. I haven't talked to him since I told him I was a lesbian in 2009. But at the time, he was high as a kite and drunk. And I had to go pick him up from the bar that he was managing at the time. And it was the worst he'd ever beat me up. Like, I almost died. And I was supposed to be in the recording studio the next day with him. I was actually in a singing group with him, not by choice, but it was, you know, I mean, I don't know if either of you have had abuse in your lives, but I kind of just did whatever my father told me, even till I was 21. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't hide it. I had two black eyes. I had scrapes and blood all over my face. And, you know, I told my stepmom. And then, you know, I called, you know, home, because my mom had moved to LA at that point and my sister was in San Francisco, and I told both of them.
And what was their reaction?
I think it was, what was that? I'm sorry.
What was their reaction?
You know, I barely even remember. I just think I remember my sister being like, you know, he's so lucky that I'm not getting on a plane right now to like kill him. Like, cause she hated him for, you know, forever. Cause he was just a jerk. And if I can compare him to anybody, like the way that he was, like, he was kind of like Trump, but he was a Democrat, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But like, he was just real nasty and mean, and everyone was just like, oh, that's just him. You know, that's just his character or whatever. But I remember my mom feeling a tremendous amount of guilt, because I think I hit it, but I don't think I hit it that well, but everyone was really afraid of him when I was growing up. Mm. And so she would always say, you know, well, you always said you wanted to live there. Cause I'd always go back and forth. I was 50-50. And I think she carried a lot of guilt with that, but I had to tell her, like, it's not her fault. I don't think it's anyone's fault other than the abuser, who was my father.
Right.
You know? And I think it was just when I physically, like, the only reason I think that I didn't die that night is because he was like, he had me down, holding me down, and he was like choking me. And my slipper, I don't know if you guys know Hawaiian slippers, like the local slippers, they're really flimsy. You get them for like $2.99 at Safeway or Foodland, but they're real flimsy. And he accidentally like stepped on me, and my slipper like broke, like the rubber part, and it snapped. And I think that like stopped him, and he's just like, oh shit, you know, like, cause he was like, he glazed over. Yeah. And he's like, oh, and he backed down and he just started crying.
Whoa.
Like bawling, crying.
Ugh.
And that had never happened. And he had never beat me up that bad. Normally it was more shaking and like, you know, a slap across the face or like like one or two punches, never that much. He was just in a rage that he couldn't stop. And I think after that, I was just like, I'm telling everybody. Like, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. it's something like just woke up in me too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was kind of weird. I mean, like I ended up having a, you know, relationship with him still until I was 30. And I think he honestly never, other than that day apologizing when he broke down in tears, he didn't apologize again until I was 30 years old. And I was on The Biggest Loser. If you guys have Googled me, I was on The Biggest Loser back in 2006. Oh my God. I got married to my ex-husband on TV. Like, it was before I realized I was a lesbian.
Oh my God. Your life is nuts, Rasha.
Oh, it's so nuts. Like, so if you do Google me, don't believe what TMZ said. I did not leave my ex-husband for my wife. We were separated. So when we were doing The Biggest Loser, of course, I mean, being on reality TV shows, like, you're incredibly vetted. So like, you have to do, like, you have to go to therapists and do all this kind of stuff. And I came home from LA right before I was about to start filming. And, you know, I just told my dad, I'm like, yeah, I just was at the psychologist and I had to answer this, you know, all these crazy questions. And he said, let me guess, they told you that you're totally fucked up because of me. And I said, no, they told me they're shocked that I'm not totally fucked up because of you.
Yeah. Wow. That must have been empowering to hear.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it was amazing. Granted, it was only on the phone, but still, I felt very empowered.
Yeah. So,
yeah. And after that day when I was 21, I ended up being on The Biggest Loser when I was 27, but he never physically hurt me again. But when I told him in 2009, you know, on the phone that I was a lesbian and I was getting divorced from my husband, he actually flew. He told me he was flying from Honolulu to Portland and that he was going to beat the gay out of me. And I haven't talked to him since.
That
is... And he did fly here. I do know that. Yeah. Because my ex-husband told me.
Oh my God.
And I just stayed away. Yeah. Welcome to my life, girls.
Yeah, right? Well, so I just have, I have one more question before we move on. How do you, or like, why do you feel like you can talk about all of this stuff? Because there's like so much shame around family and like, yeah. You know, were you worried that people were going to look at you differently? Or like, why do you feel like you can talk about all this stuff?
Honestly, I think it's because of my mom. You know, our mom, from the time she was 8 years old, she knew that she had to tell the world her life story. So she had no filter at all. And she would tell anybody who would listen. Like, I mean, and I think that's how she made her life dream come true, because she didn't want to hide anything from anyone. And she taught us to be proud of who we are, be true to who we are. And I finally just was like, you know what? Like, I believe that we all learn from one another by sharing our stories. That's how we evolve as people. And I don't think I should live in shame anymore. And I did for a very long time. And I remember, you know, my stepmom is Japanese and my dad, you know, he's a big white guy, but he was always like, you have to be more Japanese and just, you know, shut up and be quiet and not tell everybody everything. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to I am just going to be unapologetically me, because no one can take away my truth. And I want to empower other people to be who they are. You know, and it's like, I'm not hurting anyone. I'd never try to like if my father were to listen to this podcast or whatever, like I'm just speaking the truth, you know, like,
right.
I think it's our power. And it took me a long time to realize that. And of course, you know, like not having a relationship with my dad, you know, it's been 11 years now, and my mom, you know, being dead, like I feel like I'm an orphan, but at the same time, I believe that's also my power. Like, I have an amazing wife and daughter and an amazing sister and an amazing support system that makes me strong. But I just want to empower other people to share their story, because it truly is your superpower.
And to know that your story doesn't dictate your future, that you have been able to break this cycle of abuse. I think that's so inspiring, especially since we were discussing nature versus nurture on your mom's side, only to find out that your dad was evil too.
Yeah.
Oh, he was awful. Yeah. Like, horrible. I mean, and it was so weird because it was such a yin and yang, because I always went back and forth, you know, but I knew he was wrong. Like, and I think, honestly, I think that's why I didn't come out, because I knew I was a lesbian from the time I was little, but I'm super feminine. Like, the only thing stereotypically gay about me is that I play softball, and I've played competitive softball since I was 7. But I knew that if I came out, because he was super homophobic, I knew that like I would have been dead. Like, I literally would have been dead. So I think I came out in a safe space and in a safe time.
Well, I'm so glad that you were able to get there, and that you have such a, I've seen on Instagram, a beautiful daughter and wife.
Thank you. Yes, I'm madly in love with them. I mean, our life is not perfect, but I am so thankful for everything that I have.
I feel stupid saying this, but do you want to play a game show?
Oh my God, yes.
Great.
No, you do not feel stupid. I'm a total dork. I love all of it.
Well, this game is called Hypotheticals. You and Gabby are the contestants. I'm going to give you a series of hypothetical situations. You can ask as many questions as you want and then tell me what you would do in that situation. And then I just decide if I like your answer.
Okay.
Completely arbitrarily.
Oh, boy.
So the first game is, would you lie or tell the truth?
Okay.
You find out that your sister accidentally killed Mitch McConnell in a hit and run.
Amazing.
Would you lie or tell the truth when she asks you to provide an alibi?
I would provide an alibi, 100%. Absolutely. I would hope she did it on purpose.
Oh my God. This goes against everything my mom ever taught me, but I would 100% lie, especially for my sister and especially for Mitch McConnell.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Well, you know what? That's the right answer. Woo! And that was the only answer I was going to accept.
Yeah. Yes. You said the buzzwords.
Sister, forgive me, Mom.
Mitch McConnell. We're out. We're done.
I know.
Finished.
Deuces.
Okay. Our next game is, are you a terrible parent? Your seven-year-old child does some Googling without supervision and uncovers an article you wrote before they were born about hating children and never wanting to have kids.
When they
confront you about it, you say you never wrote it and it is clearly a smear campaign set up by that awful coworker of yours, Janice. Your child then trolls Janice online. Are you a terrible parent? For the record, Janice really sucks.
Oh my God.
Rasha?
Okay, I'll go first, Gabby. All right. This is what I get in trouble for and what my wife Vanna gets mad at me because I have no filter with our 8-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So I would probably tell the truth, but because we are in a hypothetical game, I would totally have to say oh my God, I can't even do it. I'd probably tell her, I'd probably like break down and tell her everything and just be like, but Janice is a horrible person. Like I would blame it all on her and then say, the truth is, honey, that yes, I did say that, but I wanted to have babies when I met your mom. So there you go. Ha ha.
Yeah. I'd just be like, people change their minds, you know?
No, you've told her it was Janice.
Ugh, you're a bad parent then. I believe in honesty with children. I believe in honesty with children.
Yeah.
Okay, but Janice really had it coming.
Yeah, well, we can get back at Janice together as a bonding activity.
I think that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I like that, actually. Okay, so our final game. Is this person an alien or just rude? While at a costume party, one of the guests walks up to you and points at another guest who is dressed as Peppa Pig. The guest who walked up to you says, that costume is going to get her killed. I guarantee it. Is this person an alien or just rude? You are also dressed as Peppa Pig.
Wow.
Wow. Oh. Hashtag rude.
I think rude. It's tricky. I guess rude because how do they know? If they're an alien, why do they know Peppa Pig?
Right. I mean, hello, mummy. Like, oh my goodness.
Oh my God.
I mean, Peppa Pig has ruled my household.
I heard that children are speaking in British accents now because of Peppa Pig. That's what I heard.
Oh, my daughter still literally calls me mummy.
Yep.
And we're Hawaiian and Argentine. She's like, mummy. I'm like, what? No.
Mummy, I'd like a spot of tea.
It's true.
You're like, what?
Well, I'll tell you what the real answer is.
What?
Okay.
On their planet. People dressed as pigs get murdered.
No, come on. Why? So this assumes.
It's her game.
No, this assumes that.
Thank you.
No, because this assumes that people live on that planet and pigs live on that planet and people dress as pigs on that planet, which is.
And why? How the fuck do you know, Gabby?
You're right. How
that
the fuck
very
you
well
know
happen.
How to fuck me, right? Okay, fine. This is what I deal with.
Thank you so much for joining us. How can people find out more about you and your work and Root of Evil?
Well, thank you so much, Gabby and Allison. You guys are amazing humans or aliens. I don't even know what you are. But of course, you can download Root of Evil on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you can get your podcast. And I am on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. I have no idea how to do TikTok, but it's all at Rasha Pecoraro, RashaPecoraro.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Thank you. Aloha.
Stick around after the break. We'll be talking all about the anti-diet movement.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Has dealing with stress and trying to get more focused a New Year's resolution you haven't cracked yet or don't really know how to fix? I have a lot of trouble staying focused, and I also get super stressed out, and I think the not being able to stay focused really dovetails with that. So if there was a way for me to keep my focus that didn't also cause my brain to get so scattered with stress, I would love to be able to fix it. I sometimes can't focus on the task at hand because I'm so busy realizing that there are things I need to do on the Just Between Us Instagram account. So I'll be like fully writing something and all of a sudden my brain will go, JBU Instagram, have to post on social media. Truvaga is a handheld product that stimulates the vagus nerve to improve overall health and wellness. Stimulating the vagus nerve with Truvaga helps to balance and strengthen the nervous system, which reduces stress, increases focus, improves mood, and improves sleep. Truvaga is owned by Electrocore and uses its patented technology for overall health and wellness benefits. Its utilized technology is the most clinically studied and tested vagus nerve therapy available. Customizable sessions are only 2 minutes long. Recommended usage is one session in the morning and one at night. Truvaga comes programmed with 350 sessions, which, if used twice a day, will last approximately 6 months. It's drug-free and easy-to-use therapy to help improve your health. No app or phone is required. We offer free standard shipping, payment plan options, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. It's only available in the U.S. at this time. Visit Truvaga.com, Truvaga.com, and enter promo code JUSTBETWEENUS to enhance your wellness journey, support this podcast, and receive $15 off. That's Truvaga.com. Check out promo code JUSTBETWEENUS.
Just Between Us, it's time for topics.
XXXXXXXXX, baby.
Baby.
Wow. Okay. So what made you choose the anti-diet movement?
Well, as you know, I've been thinking a lot about like my body and weight and like trying to sort of like fight against all the instincts I've had since I was a child about what is good and what's bad. And then I, obviously in getting engaged, I started thinking about my body and being like, well, I should probably lose that 10 pounds so that I can buy the best dress and so that I can like look the best for my wedding, and then I could just gain it back after my wedding, like whatever.
Interesting and, instinct.
I think it's very common.
Yeah, no, I know. People always choose like a date in the future and they're like, this is when I need to have this weight for.
Yeah. And then I saw this article from The Knot, which is like a wedding website. That was basically saying that like wedding shedding, which is like shedding the weight, is like very unhealthy and bad and not something people should do.
Oh, wow. Really? Breaking fucking news.
But it was really cool that a wedding website would send that out, I thought. You would imagine they'd be like, it's the one day of your life that matters the most and you must do everything you can to make it so perfect.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying they could make money, like they could get clicks of like best wedding diets or whatever, but they like chose not to. So that's
totally
interesting.
And then that's sort of like, I don't know, then I saw this other article and I realized that there's like this movement called the anti-diet movement. Right. And it's not about not being healthy. It's very much about being healthy, but it's like points out that this system of going on diets and dieting is like,
oh, it doesn't work.
It does not work.
Yeah.
It just causes your weight to like go up and down. Mm-hmm. It like causes stress. It's like, it's like non-sustainable. It's like mentally damaging. Mm-hmm. And I just think that that's such a great thing. And I didn't have like the words for it before.
The shift into like anti-dieting. Because I remember, oh my God, and it's probably still prevalent, but I remember like when my mom, when I was like in the, you know, a teenager, my mom would be drinking these like, what was it called? Crystal Light? Or mm-hmm. like when you would like have these like diet drinks, or like it would be, you know, this big thing of like, oh, I'm just like on a diet or whatever, would like be constant. Like every woman in my life was like on a diet. I have to examine a lot of times like my own thoughts on that. I never judge other people, but I judge myself so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like I hate that I like look at a picture of myself in the past and be like, oh, I was so thin.
I do like, that all the time.
Oh my God. I was joking. This is so dark. But I was joking with my partner where I was like, I've like gained weight in quarantine and I'm totally great with it. And I was like, this is great. And I was like, because I remember saying to my partner, I was like, I remember the times when I was the thinnest was when I was the most suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like making a joke being like, you know, you're just trying to get back to suicide skinny. Like, it's so bad. Like, it's so bad. Like, it's like, what if you framed it like that? Like, what if I actually was like, I just want to get back to the weight I was when I wanted to die. Like, if you framed it like that, you would be like, oh, no, you don't. Like, that's right. Terrible.
I think that my big issue with it is like, it's always been thought of as like, skinny is good. It shows you have like high moral character, and that you have like you have willpower, and that you take care of yourself, and that, and like that's all such bullshit. And like right. all of this stuff about like some food is good, some food is evil. Like I was reading more and more about this movement, and like their whole thing is like it's about your body as a whole and what mm-hmm. is healthy for your body. So like if you want a cupcake, eat that cupcake. But then if you eat four, notice that your body probably feels bogged down, and like you might have a stomach ache, and like,
yeah.
So it's more about just like listening to what your body genuinely wants and not denying yourself stuff. But sometimes unhealthy food makes you feel bad. So like be aware of that.
This is the thing where like Nancy Pelosi called Trump morbidly obese as sort of like a shade. We don't need it. Like, there's so much to criticize, and like, it just sucks. Like, I saw, like, Megan Tonjes was tweeting about it, who's like a really great fat positive YouTuber and musician. And it's just like, there's so many other things to go after. And also, it's not indicative of his moral failing. Like, his racism and sexism and mm-hmm. like sexual assault allegations are indicative of his moral failings. And I just like, you know what I've noticed a lot? Okay. This is also dark. People are passing away from COVID. And then underneath the article will be the comments. And the comments are like, well, they had like a pre-existing, like, look at them. They clearly had diabetes. Or like, look at them. They clearly were like, if the person's even like a little overweight, all the comments are like, well, see, of course. And that is crazy. That is so damaging. Like, so what? So their life doesn't fucking matter? Like, are you joking?
Also, this idea of, like, the number on this scale equals how healthy you are is just false. Like,
it's just not right. It's not true.
There's, like, tons of people who, like, technically maybe their BMI is, like, above average. Mm-hmm. But they're healthy and they're in great shape and they could run a fucking marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are people whose BMI is probably below average and they're, like, can't even walk up a hill.
Yeah.
Also, a big thing in this movement is that, like, this is how you become – dieting is how you create an unhealthy relationship with food that can mm-hmm. often lead to an eating disorder.
Yes, totally.
And like, it's just like, and it's so interesting because I've been working so hard to try and change my mindset on this. And it's still like every time I look in the mirror, like I can still see that I am like, I'm monitoring my weight always, even though in my brain I'm like, doesn't matter. It's fine. Like, who cares? Mm-hmm. But it's like, I think it has been just so ingrained in us, like, mm-hmm. especially where I grew up, especially my family, that like it is, of all the things I've had to unlearn, this has been the hardest for me.
Yeah.
And it is still an ongoing process that I'm fighting against. And I think with this wedding coming up, I really feel like this is going to be like my battle, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's also this like push in the queer community, like to be thin. And I've noticed it a lot where like there's a lot of jokes about not eating that I've picked up on like a lot in like queer media recently where like, okay, so I watch a lot of Drag Race and there's this thing at the final four of Drag Race. They go, oh, you're going to have lunch with RuPaul. And like the final four are like, oh my God, amazing. I get to go have lunch with RuPaul. And they go and the joke is that each one has a Tic Tac on their plate. And that's the joke.
I hate that.
And they still do it. And it's not funny. Like it's bad. Like, but there's this whole thing of like in the queer community, especially of like, not eating or like, oh, I'm about to go to Dinosaur. Like I'm about to go to like some queer event where I'm going to be half naked. So I need to just be like so thin.
And it's like, I also think quarantine has been like a real focus on weight even more than normal because it's like you're either going to come out of quarantine 15 pounds heavier or ripped and there's no other option. And
people who gives a shit?
Yeah, and people like worrying that they're going to put on like the quarantine weight and like what's it going to be like when they have to see people again. And like it's just like re-energizing this like national conversation about how like any weight gain is so inherently bad. And it's so hurtful and it's so damaging. And I would love for more people to look into this anti-diet movement because I think it makes some really good points because it's really about like if you feel good in your body. So yeah. Like working out for me is like it really helps my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that's great. And I also really like being more flexible and I like being able to carry heavy stuff. And like mm-hmm. I like being strong and like so this movement like focuses on like those things.
Right.
Versus like get tight and toned for the summer.
Right.
We need to like stop associating like a number with someone's health because it's not true.
It's not true. Yeah. Ugh.
Whatever. Tamika, do you want to come on in and share all of your thoughts one by one up to 35 thoughts?
When you were like, working out just helps my mental health, I wanted to be like, and not working out helps mine. Hi. Hello.
How's it going?
Oh, it's good. What did you think of this episode?
Oh my gosh. It was kind of a wild ride. I was not expecting our guest to go there with her story, but I'm glad that she felt comfortable enough to be vulnerable like that because it's really important to hear people you wouldn't expect go through that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I think it's amazing what life she's built for herself based on the life she was given.
Yeah. And like just I admire anyone who talks openly about their family shit because I think that's particularly hard to do because I do feel like, you know, she is opening herself up to scrutiny of people being like, oh, like you must be bad because your, you know, grandfather, great grandfather was bad. Like, I think that's a thing that people like they believe in bloodlines that way instead of nurture, which is clearly what she's the product of.
Mm-hmm. But even more than nurture, because her dad was her co-parent and he was horrible. Mm-hmm.
But one beautiful mom can make up for it.
It's a protective factor.
Yeah, like I just think like and also her love for her mom is so beautiful.
I know. What do you guys rate the episode?
I rate it 5 out of 5 judgmental of your engagement.
You're that judgmental of my engagement?
Not you. Oh, my God. Not you. The other people I mentioned.
Tamika?
2 out of 2 Gemini.
Hey, and I'll go with -7 out of 18 diets.
Okay, that's interesting.
Which means the episode was great, but diets are bad.
Okay, I see. Yes, yes, yes. I love that. I get it.
And what did we learn from the episode?
Gosh, so much. I mean, everything Rasha said was incredible. I learned about how you can take pain and turn it into art, how mm-hmm. you can take pain and make it something that can help other people, and about, like, you know, taking the good of your family more to heart than the bad.
I loved going towards the light. Right? I just think that that's such a powerful metaphor and something that we can all strive for.
Yeah. And like, no matter what your situation, that is mm-hmm. beautiful.
Thank you so much to Rasha Pecoraro for being our guest. Just Between Us is hosted by me, Allison Raskin.
And me, Gabby Dunn.
Our engineer is Brendan Burns. He also composed our killer theme music and has a new album out now.
Go check it out. Our producer is Tamiko Weatherspoon. Our executive producers are Chris Bannon and Josephine Moderana.
Just Between Us is a production of Stitcher. Listen to Brandon's music. Brendan! Oh my God.
Oh my God!
Fuck. I have this. What is this disorder called? Is what
dyslexia.
I want to know.
Dyslexia. It's called dyslexia.
I'm so sorry.
Stitcher. Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.